is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back. It is hour number two of the Lombardi Line here on the DraftKings Network. Femi Abebefe alongside Michael Lombardi out in the great state of New Jersey. We had a fun first hour. If you missed it, make sure you search the Lombardi Line wherever you get your podcast. You can check it out in podcast form. We have a fun second hour on deck for you guys as well. We'll discuss some college football, something that we haven't done that much throughout the course of the summer, but we're inching closer and closer to the college football regular season. I mean, week zero is a month from now. So college football is definitely now in the forefront of our minds here on the Lombardi Line. Brandon Marcello of 24/7 Sports will help us break down SEC media days as we came and went down there in Dallas. Get his takeaways from what he heard at SEC media days, and maybe some dark horse teams that could potentially make this new 12-team college football playoff. But Michael, before we get into that, I want to update the folks on what's happening over at Royal Troon across the pond for the Open Championship. Scotty Scheffler was two back about 5 minutes ago, but unfortunately he three putts. he had a par putt from about 8 feet. He had unfortunately three putts, so now he is four back. He falls to two under. Justin Rose and Billy Horschel are our co-leaders right now at six under.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, when Scheffler misses those putts, you kind of – I thought Wes made a great point. He thinks it's going to be eight under. And when you miss – when you three putt the way he just did there, you basically remove yourself, and obviously the odds reflect it. You know, getting Scotty Scheffler at 28-1 with nine holes to play, that's not a good play right now. So, you know, maybe this is going to come down. If it goes to minus eight to win it, you know, that's a long way from where we were yesterday. Give Shane Lowry credit. I mean, I think mental toughness is there, because yesterday shooting a 77 on the back nine, shooting a 77 total and having one of the worst back nines you could have. Scotty Scheffler said it was the hardest round of golf he ever had. I'm not sure he'll say that after what he just went through on the ninth.
Yeah, man, maybe the ninth hole is the hardest hole that he's had. The broadcast was showing him. He looked a little bit dejected. As the golfers, you know, sometimes they get down in the dumps a little bit, but you're only one golf shot away from being right back into the swing of things. So I don't think you can count out Scotty Scheffler, but I definitely wouldn't be putting my money on him at 28-1. That's just – it's probably not getting the proper price for a guy who's now four back with only nine holes to play. But Scheffler, of course, they're always going to make you pay that Scotty tax since he's a proven winner on the PGA Tour. We'll see who wins this thing, though. Xander Schauffele is only a shot back. He's at five under. Thurston Lawrence as well at five under there. That's kind of a name that not too many people know. Wes was discussing him. He's on the DP, the World Tour there, and he's right in the mix of this thing. And that's what the Open Championship brings us. It brings us some unfamiliar faces who can be there at the top of the leaderboard on a Sunday, as we have it right now with Justin Rose and Billy Horschel, the co-leaders at six under. We'll keep our eyes on what's going on there. Before we get into the college football, Michael, did you happen to see, I don't know if you were watching yesterday afternoon, the Team USA basketball against South Sudan? They were laying 41
and a
half.
I did.
And they won by 1 point. I'm sure someone's out there who laid 41 and a half and then is watching the game being like, what in the world is happening?
have you been watching my guy? Have you watched him?
It's bad. It's really bad.
He can't move.
Yeah.
I mean, for anybody to be betting the 76ers based on the premise that this guy's an elite player in the league, you're not watching the same game I'm watching. You know, A, conditioning. I just read an article in the New York Times about him where he just feels like he's everything status quo. It's all right in front of him. I mean, he's so unself-aware. Yeah. Conditioning never was brought up in the article. Someone sent it to me. And then when I watch him, I would think most fans that don't pay attention that aren't 76er fans that are watching the Olympic team, they probably feel like, as I do, Anthony Davis is the much better option out there on the court.
Mm-hmm. 100%. Like, I went to the USA-Canada game. Somebody sitting in front of me was saying they need to be starting Anthony Davis over Joel Embiid. Now, they were a Laker fan, of course, but still, like, even if you're a Laker fan or not, I think it's pretty clear, like, who the best big man on Team USA is. And, you know, these things, the politics plays into it.
He's impossible to play with. He's a tremendous player, but he's impossible to play with because he plays a position that's only for him, which is 15 feet out. You know, you can't space the floor. You know, he's not a low post center. So, you know, this whole thing, and I mean, Daryl Morey's got his hands full. You know, he's built this team around the concept that Embiid's an elite player. Is he? He's an elite scorer. Is he an elite player? That's another question.
Yeah. He's an elite talent, but as we've seen, like, can he make it through a regular season and postseason? He has not been able to do that since, I mean, goodness, like, what, 2019 was the last time that he was healthy in a playoffs? It's just, it kind of is what comes with the dinner when Joel Embiid is on your team. And for the Philadelphia 76ers.
Go look at the article. Go look at the article in the Times or the Athletic. They're both the same. But go look at it and see he's dunking. He looks in 10 times better shape at Kansas than he does today.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, he's almost like a different person at Kansas. It's like a different person when you watch the Kansas tape. It's like, oh, who's this guy? This guy, like, it could be Akeem Olajuwon on 2.0 when he's at Kansas. And now it's just 15-footers at the elbow, you know, three-pointers, step back. And yeah, he's really good at those 15-footers. He's perfected it. But, man, you want a little bit more than what Joel Embiid is giving the Sixers and also what he's giving Team USA. Like, Team USA, they'll be fine. They're going to win gold, I believe. Like, they're minus 500 to do so. Barring some sort of epic disaster, they should win gold. But maybe yesterday was a little bit of a wake-up call for Team USA, and maybe, just maybe, they shake up that lineup and perhaps maybe put Anthony Davis in the starting lineup instead of Joel Embiid. But that might cause some issues, maybe. So who knows if they go down that path. Steve Kerr, good luck, buddy. At least Paris will be a fun time in about a week or so. But let's discuss college football here, Michael, because we have some futures insights from our friends over at DraftKings, what people have been betting on throughout the course of this summer. And the most bet team in terms of the handle is the Ohio State Buckeyes. 41% of the handle, Ohio State plus 400 to win the college football playoff title. They're 31% of the bets are on the Buckeyes, so a lot of money on Ohio State here. For Georgia, only 17% of the handle, but 31% of the bets are on the Bulldogs. Texas, 6% of the handle at plus 750, also 6% of the bets. Alabama, 5% on both, as well as Oregon at 4% on both. Oregon plus 850, Alabama 14-1 now with Kalen DeBoer in year one in Tuscaloosa. How do you interpret some of those betting splits and the market insights here from our friends at DraftKings?
I just don't think people understand how good Oregon is. Wes mentioned them, you know, Dylan Gabriel playing that Moore, the young kid who went to UCLA, top five recruit in the country, who transferred from UCLA up there. They have great skill. The offensive line, Dan Lanning's done a really good job. I mean, Georgia's going to be a question mark. Texas, I think, certainly is there. Alabama at 14-1 might be right. It's tough to follow Nick Saban, especially with all the transfers that come in there. But I think Oregon is a little bit undervalued at 850. I think that they'll be able to, and we'll see them play Ohio State. They'll be able to get into the tournament, which is 12 teams. I think there's no question about that. And then from there, we'll see where the injury levels go. But I do think that at 4% of the handle and 4% of the bets, I just think this is a combination of people not understanding the West Coast teams and how good they are.
Yeah, Oregon's really good. I mean, we saw them last year. I mean, if not for the Washington bugaboos that they had, they were one of the best teams in all of college football. I think even after the playoff was announced, the four teams, I think a lot of people, odds makers, still said Oregon was one of their four best teams a season ago, despite the two losses to Washington in the regular season and also in the Pac-12 title game here in Las Vegas. I'm looking at the schedule right now for the Ducks. You mentioned it. They play Ohio State. That's a home game, Saturday, October 12th. That'll be a massive, massive game. I can't, like this, as weird as it is, as like a West Coast guy, I wanted the Pac-12 to stay together because that's the conference I grew up watching, and I like those kind of regional rivalries. Seeing Oregon and Ohio State playing in October, it's hard to be mad about that, you know? It really is. It's hard to be mad about matchup.
You just got to shift your mindset. I mean, the hard one's going to be that Cal and Stanford are in the ACC. I mean, how's that working out for you? You know, Cal playing Florida State in the middle. Yeah, I mean, you know, that one's a little bit more difficult for me, but I don't think we're done with the rearrangement. I don't think we're done with all this. You know, the way this NIL is, the way these conferences are going to give money to schools, it's fascinating the way the schools are rebuilding stadiums. Penn State just got approval to put $750 million into their new stadium, which came at a lot of, you know, a lot of conversation with the alumni and the board of trustees there at Penn State. So, there's so much money in college football that you either get all in or you're going to have to go all out. And I think that MAC we talked about is one of those conferences where the level of talent isn't out of whack. Mm-hmm. And I think for us as bettors, we can really hone in on that. They play weird days. It's kind of a little bit difficult, but that still money is green, and I think there's a chance if you understand that conference the best, you can really make some hay.
All tickets cash the same, whether it's the MAC or if it's an Alabama-Auburn game in the Iron Bowl. Like, all the tickets cash the same. And the MAC, we get that Tuesday, Wednesdays. So those are usually fun games, those standalone games in that conference. It's a nice time to kind of highlight some of the Midwest college football that we have in our country there. I do want to ask you about the SEC, because Wes brought up Ole Miss as a potential dark horse team to make the college football playoff. A lot of talent with the Rebels there. Do you agree with that?
I don't think they're a dark horse. I don't. I'm counting them. I was asked the question the other day on the show. Is I count them in. I think to me, Mississippi, Georgia, Texas are the three schools from the Southeast Conference that are going to get in. You know, I'm not certain about Alabama yet. I mean, Milroe, I think, has really improved last year. I think when you watch Milroe play from the beginning of the season when he played against Texas to the end of the year, certainly against Michigan, I think you see great improvement. I think Milroe's really coming on, but I don't know where the rest of the Alabama team's going to fit in. I don't count them out because they are talented. But I do think that this Mississippi team, especially the money they put in, I mean, Ohio State and Mississippi have paid for their teams well.
Yeah, that's the new day in college football. It's the NIL. You go ahead and get some of these talented players to come join your roster, and you can put together some really, really good teams. Real quick before we go to break, do you think we see Arch Manning this season as a starter for Texas?
I mean, if Years gets hurt. I mean, if Quinn gets hurt, that's the only way. I mean, but the kid stayed. I admire him for staying, but when's he going to play?
It's a big question with the University of Texas. We'll ask that and much more on the other side of Brandon Marcello here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Start your football season off right with our VSiN football special. When you sign up before the end of July and get a full VSiN Pro access from now to the Super Bowl for an early bird discount of $175, that saves you nearly 50% off the monthly price. With VSiN Pro, you'll gain access to the daily best bets, exclusive betting splits, data, proven betting systems, and analysis from professional handicappers, and much more. You also get our special edition betting guides, like our new NFL betting guide, which is out now, and it's packed with detailed team, division, and conference analysis, plus season win totals, futures, props, and awards best bets. Our expert insights and in-depth coverage will keep you informed and help you make smarter bets throughout the season. Go to vsin.com/subscribe. Once again, early bird discount $175 before the end of July. We cannot endorse that deal enough. Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line here on the DraftKings Network. Femi Abebefe, Michael Lombardi. And we were talking a little college football in the last segment there. And I wanted to ask you about Michigan, because this is a team that you visited last year around this time. And you came back and told me, this is a really connected team. This is a really, really good team, and they should be up there in terms of winning the national title. And all they did was go ahead and run the table and ultimately win the national title. But now Jim Harbaugh is in Los Angeles with the Chargers. Sharon Moore takes over as the head coach here. Do you think the betting markets are sort of kind of overlooking Michigan? Because we all expect there to be some kind of a drop-off going from Harbaugh to Moore, but Moore is right there, and the team was still really talented and aggressive. And they also brought in Wink Martindale, now a defensive coordinator.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, when you lose your quarterback, right, and you lose J.J. McCarthy, and now you're going to play a redshirt sophomore, or Jay, I don't know if he's ready to play or if they're going to go with a grad transfer, Tuttle. I think, to me, there remains to be some questions. But Donovan Edwards, let's not make any mistake about this. He's an outstanding running back, and they've always been very good in the offensive line. I mean, that's one of the things that Moore has been brought into by the Harbaughs, understanding how to do that. I think they'll be better on defense. There's no question better. When I say I think Wink Martindale will do a good job of attacking the quarterback and finding the players, I think it's going to take some time at the quarterback position to figure this all through. Look, they do have talent. I mean, Loveland is a really good player at tight end. Like I mentioned, Edwards is a good player. Do they have enough skill? I think they do. I think it's going to come down to, can they get production from the quarterback and how good he plays? And we'll see that early in the season when they play Texas, which is a good team too.
Yeah, and those guys were fully endorsing the Sherrone Moore hire. They were saying it has to be Coach Moore. Like, if Jim's leaving to go to the Chargers, give us Sherrone Moore as our head coach. And the administration and the president, they went ahead and listened to that. The athletic directors, all that there, they listened and hired Sherrone Moore as the full-time head coach. It just, to me, it just seems a little weird seeing their preseason win total at just 9, given the fact that, yeah, like, I get that Harbaugh's gone, McCarthy is gone, but the trenches are still packed out there for the Wolverines. Is now we welcome in our guy Brandon Marcello from 24/7 Sports, college football reporter, joining us now on the Progressive Guest Line to talk college football here. And Brandon, we were just having a conversation about the Michigan Wolverines, the defending national champions, and how the betting markets at least expect there to be a drop off with Jim Harbaugh now in the NFL, JJ McCarthy now in the NFL. How do you see the Wolverines this year heading into this 2024 season?
I think there will be a little bit of a drop off there. You know, for one, they don't necessarily have the depth they had last year, number one. But two, I do think that there is something to be said about the coaching change there. You know, them promoting Sherrone Moore, the idea behind that was to develop some consistency on the coaching staff. And the exact opposite happened. Practically everybody else left or got fired through some of the investigation stuff that was going on there. And really the only common piece that's still there is Sherrone Moore and a few of the players. You also got to look at that schedule. I mean, goodness gracious, week one, you know, with Texas, that really kind of opens my eyes. This isn't like a, hey, we get to swim in the shallow end of the pool first. We got to jump head first in. And it's going to be an interesting year for Michigan. We'll see how it all goes. But I got a lot of questions about the Wolverines going into the year to kind of holds me back from saying they might be a Big Ten contender this season.
All right, let's stay in the Big Ten for a second. I think one of the most fascinating teams that we don't talk enough about is Nebraska because of their ability and how they recruited. Raiola is one of the top quarterbacks in the country coming out of high school. What's your handicap of them as they enter this year two of the Matt Rhule regime?
Yeah, you know, I was talking to Matt Rhule a couple months ago about all this, and I just straight up asked, I go, you know, do you got a bowl team? He goes, oh yeah, we got a bowl team. And if we don't make a bowl, that's absolute disappointment for Nebraska this season. You know, they should have done it last year. And you're right, with Dylan Raiola there, they're going to be more talented offensively. I mean, they've had a string of just bad quarterbacks there at Nebraska, even before Matt Rhule. And last year, I was shocked at just how bad things were still offensively at quarterback for them. I thought Jeff Sims, despite some of his limitations, was going to be much better than what he was. I saw him at Georgia Tech, and there were some games where he just really kind of popped off the page, but completely inconsistent there and really kind of was a detriment to that offense. And, you know, Raiola, listen, as talented as he is, he's going to need time to grow in that offense. It's going to take time before they start having some of those big games, but they've got the talent. They've got the depth now to where they should get to a bowl game. And to me, you look at that schedule, Nebraska is a 7-win team this year. That's what the way I look at it.
We're hanging out with Brandon Marcello, national college football reporter for 24/7 Sports. Brandon joining us courtesy the Progressive Guest Line here on the Lombardi Line. Well, let's turn our attention to the SEC. You were in Dallas for SEC Media Days. A little interesting that, like, Texas OU, it's in Dallas. Usually this is in, like, Nashville or Atlanta, one of those cities there. But what was your big takeaway from talking to the coaches, the players, and other people in the media about what the SEC should look like this upcoming season?
Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of us just kind of expect Texas to be a contender immediately and everything. I agree with that, but I also think that I know people kind of go, well, that's just a stereotype that they can't get used to the week-to-week grind of the SEC, but I do think there is something to be said about that. You know, you saw last year, you know, Texas, like any good team still, had some close calls, the Kansas State game, for example, last year. But how do you handle that when you're going in the SEC and playing the likes of an Alabama and then maybe an Ole Miss the next week or whatever? It's very difficult to do that week to week to week to week. So, you know, I still think Texas is a contender. I don't know if I necessarily would vote Texas as one of my top two teams in the SEC to finish this year. I'm still pretty high on, obviously, Georgia. I'm still pretty high on Ole Miss, and I don't even know if Ole Miss is better than Texas, but Ole Miss's schedule is easier than Texas. Their schedule is very conducive to win and get to Atlanta in the SEC championship game. Outside that, SEC Media Days this year, was very boring to me. It was kind of a vacuum without Nick Saban being on the stage and kind of setting the agenda and setting the topics. Because usually when he goes up there, he sets the tone for the entire week, and other coaches are responding to kind of what he said about the state of college athletics and everything. We didn't have someone to control the room this year. It was pretty remarkable just kind of how dry everything was this week.
What we no longer have Jimbo Fisher to kick around anymore, and he's taken all the money and run off to West Virginia. But talk to us about Mike Elko and the A&M team, because one thing we do know about Jimbo, as bad as he was on game day, he could recruit. I mean, there is talent at A&M.
Yeah, certainly. But still, they had a lot of talent leave. They had, I think, Texas A&M was, I think they ranked third in the country in the amount of transfers they had to bring in. Over 30 transfers are brought in. They brought in some talented guys. They just don't quite have the depth that Elko wants, obviously. I think Connor Wigman is a very talented. He's got a quarterback. He's got a lot of swag about him. I hear he's a very confident guy, gets in people's faces. They're going to be good this year. And Elko, by design, and his staff have been very quiet. It's the exact opposite of what Jimbo Fisher and his staff was. No drama going on in the background. No one's talking. They're not talking to the media. They're a team that just wants to fly under the radar, if not completely off the radar. And I'm interested to see what they look like. They've got a lot of really talented pieces, and they've got a much better coach and CEO, I should say, to handle everything. Just for the fact of the matter of, despite all that turmoil and all the turbulence and all the players leaving and coming and going, it was very quiet this offseason. Whereas with Jimbo Fisher, it seemed like every day there was something bad happening.
Brandon, we got about 45 seconds left. Who do you like to win the Heisman this year?
I'm going to go with Carson Beck, the quarterback of Georgia. He's got the quickest release in all of college football. He really started figuring it out in the last half of last season. He's got a lot of talent around him. I really like what he could do there. Outside that, it's another quarterback, but I go with Will Howard at Ohio State. Has every weapon possible that you would need to win a Heisman there. I'm really like him. Will Howard and Cam Ward were the best quarterbacks and best players I thought that were in the portal this offseason, but I'll go with Carson Beck. I really like his decision making.
You do a lot worse than going with the quarterback of the Georgia Bulldogs. That's a really talented team and going to be in the playoff, and maybe they go ahead and run the table out there in a tough SEC. He is Brandon Marcello, national college football reporter for 24/7 Sports. Brandon, we appreciate the time as well, man. Be well.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Good stuff there from Brandon Marcello, who joined us on the Progressive Guest Line. We'll react to what he had to say. We'll also get into blue chips, red chips here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line here on a Sunday, hanging out with you guys on the DraftKings Network. Femi Abebefe, Michael Lombardi. Thank you to Brandon Marcello, who joined us in the last segment from 24/7 Sports, breaking down college football. We have a couple segments left in the program. We have a new leader, actually, at the Open Championship. That is Tristan Lawrence, now at 7-under. Justin Rose still at 6-under. Billy Horschel has dropped a shot. He is back to 5-under. He joins Xander Schauffele at tied for third. Russell Henley still at 4-under. Shane Lowry, he dropped a shot. He's at 3-under. So this story of Tristan Lawrence, he's now the favorite, plus 220 to win the Open Championship. And we always say that this is a tournament that can give you some curveballs, and this would certainly be one of them if he's able to hold on here.
Well, I think the back nine is going to be real interesting, right, Femi? I think to me, and Wes may be right, 8-under does win the tournament. I think that's certainly the case, but you could feel the tension building as you get into that turn, and, you're going to have to play the tough holes on this back nine, or the second nine, however they refer to it. And, that's where it's all going to come. Scottie Scheffler had a chance. I think we all thought he could. I mean, he hasn't shot one round in the 60s yet. But, three putting that hole killed him.
100%. And like you said, the back nine is the tougher of the nine holes here at Royal Troon. So I think that when you talk about it being difficult, that I think that opens it up for a lot of guys. So as long as you're within four shots, like I wouldn't even discount Shane Lowry if he can just kind of be steady Eddie. Maybe some of these other guys come back to the pack a little bit. But I think Lowry is probably the cutoff for who can win it. Like right now, looking at the broadcast, the leaderboard that they have on there, I think the winner's coming from that group. Lawrence, Rose, Shoffley, Horschel, Henley, right. Lowry. I think that's going to be our win. And that's not breaking news.
Five under to seven under is kind of where that pack is. Maybe Henley could be in it too. Lowry at three under. That's a lot of ground to make up with nine holes to play.
Yeah, I mean, but maybe it's 6 under that wins this thing. You never know, like, with the back nine being rather difficult. I did want to ask you, though, because we had Brandon Marcello on in the last segment. He also brought up Ole Miss. You've talked about Ole Miss. Wes brought up Ole Miss. A lot of love here for the Rebels. And when I asked him about the Heisman Trophy, I was wondering if he was going to go down the Jackson Dart path, who is the quarterback for the Ole Miss Rebels. What do you make of Jackson Dart heading into this season? He's a guy who's athletic. He can put up some big numbers. Could he potentially, in Lane Kiffin's offense that scores a lot of points, that could be a guy that is in the Heisman conversations right now. He's sitting at 14-1 over at DraftKings.
Yeah, well, I think, look, he can run it. And in the offense, they've got great skill players. I mean, look, and then when you look, what's been the downfall of Ole Miss? Particularly, it's been their defense, right? Yeah. So they add one of the best players in the country in Walter Nolan from Texas A&M. They add a safety from Oklahoma, Key Lawrence. They add an edge rusher from University of Florida. I can't pronounce his name. They had one of the best players at Arkansas last year in Chris Paul Jr., the linebacker. And then they get a corner from Alabama, Trey Amos. I mean, they get basically five big-time players to go with four players from high school who are four-star recruits. So they're going to get them in there right away. And then when you look at it, they're going to have good production from their defense. And then offensively, you know, they get Juice Wells, the wide receiver from South Carolina. They get Parrish, the running back from Miami. They get an offensive tackle from North Carolina, Pounds, and they get a guard from Washington, and they strengthen their offensive line and their skill players, along with taking a junior college transfer in Smith as a receiver. So, look, this team has put their money where their mouth is, and I think Lane is in position to at least get to the 12. If he's not one of the best 12 teams in the country, I would be very surprised. And I think Lane's got ambition, you know, to continue to go what they're doing at Ole Miss. He's done a great job so far, but they've always kind of fell short a little bit. And I think with this depth that they've added, is pretty impressive.
Yeah, you couple that with the schedule being somewhat manageable, and Ole Miss is a team, and like Jackson Dart as well, if you're into the Heisman Trophy markets, like he's sitting as the fourth choice right now at 14-1. Maybe he should be closer to Carson Beck and Quinn Ewers in that 8-1, 10-1 range, given the his own talent and also the talent that's surrounding him. And also, we mentioned how the Heisman Trophy is the biggest political arena that we might have going. Ole Miss and Lane Kiffin, if Jackson Dart is worthy, they will be campaigning for him. So you got to keep that in mind. Like just like how LSU was sort of campaigning for Jaden Daniels. Like Lane Kiffin will go down those roads. He'll talk and say that my guy should be the Heisman Trophy winner if Jackson Dart is in the mix. So just something to maybe keep in mind there. That's one that sort of opened my eyes a little bit as we've been talking over the last few days, and Ole Miss keeps getting brought up as a team that could be a contender.
Well, I think the other thing too, what Brendan mentioned too, is scheduling, right, Femi? Yeah. So they open up with Fordham, Middle Tennessee, they go to Wake Forest, Georgia Southern, they have Kentucky at home, South Carolina at South Carolina. Then they're probably, you know, now we're into October, and their hardest game, they have to go to LSU, they get Oklahoma at home, and Arkansas. And then they have Georgia at home, and they go to Florida and end the season at Mississippi State. So, like, the schedule, really, we won't really know about Ole Miss. They're going to be in the top 10 and when the coaches poll until they got to go to October the 12th to go to LSU and see what they do there, right? I mean, that shouldn't be any problems for the first six games. They should be 6-0. If they're not, it's going to be a huge disappointment to Rebel fans.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, and that's a price that could drop. Like Ole Miss futures, those prices could drop a little bit and age well over those 6 weeks. Maybe Jackson Dart, by the time we get to October 12th in Baton Rouge, maybe he's 7-1 instead of 14-1, just given the fact that he's put up a lot of numbers. But those, obviously, the second half of the schedule is where the Heisman Trophy will be won, with those marquee games that a lot of people will be watching. And if he can put up big numbers and they could win at least a handful of those games, I think he'll definitely be in the conversation. Speaking of the Heisman Trophy over at DraftKings, the highest handle is actually on Kansas State quarterback Avery Johnson, 9% of the handle, 7% of the bets. Then Dylan Gabriel going over from Oklahoma now at Oregon, he's at 8% of the handle, 6% of the bets. Shedeur Sanders is at 7% of the handle, 5% of the bets. Will Howard, who Brandon mentioned in the last segment there, at 6% of the handle, 5% of the bets. He's 15-1 as he's moved over to Ohio State. Then Quinn Ewers, 6% of the bets, 5% of the bets as well, as 6% of the handle at 10-1. Quinn Ewers, though, I think maybe if he gets off to a rocky start, there's going to be the calls and the cries for Arch Manning to play for Texas. Like he's under a little bit of pressure, even though he led his team to the CFP last year. He better not be comfortable as the QB1 for the Longhorns.
Right. You know, but I think let's go back to Kansas State for a second, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's always going to be the media conversation. It's going to be about when is Manning going to play, right? Yeah. When's Arch going to play? But I think the Kansas State conversation is really interesting because Will Howard was a good player for Kansas State.
Yeah.
And Avery Johnson is a different player. I mean, 23 touchdowns, 8 interceptions last year. He just gives them a different, you know, amazing athleticism. I mean, he never started a game last year, Femi. I don't know if you watched much of Kansas State, but when he came in, he was unbelievable. And then in the bowl game, he was like, whoa, where'd they get this kid from? Yeah. And I think Kluman does a great job at Kansas State. Now that, you know, with the eight, now that the Big 12 has expanded, they kind of have a little bit like Utah. They have a Big 10 mentality in how they play.
100%. I really do think Utah is going to win that conference. Just because, like, Kyle Whittingham,
me too.
Those guys.
But I think
just...
Kansas State, I think this Avery Johnson kid's interesting, though. I think he's worth talking about.
100%. Like, yeah, he's a dynamic player. And anytime, like, there's a reason why the handle is on him. And, like, maybe some people that might not have watched Kansas State play a bunch last year, but he's a dynamic quarterback, and that's what you want. And there's now with the playoff being a 12-team playoff, because usually it was you wanted to pick a quarterback on a team that was likely going to go to the playoffs, or if they weren't going to go to the playoffs, they were going to put up the video game type numbers, as we saw Jaden Daniels do last year. That's how he won the Heisman, despite not making the CFP. But usually it comes from a playoff team. But now that it's 12-team playoff, I think that brings more contenders into the conversation for the Heisman Trophy, to where you can now, if you put up big numbers on a 2-loss, 3-loss team, as long as you get to the playoff, I think you could be sitting there in New York City before and hear your name called as the next Heisman Trophy winner. So Avery Johnson at 25-1 is interesting. Shedeur Sanders, I mean, that's, I think a lot of people just this Colorado thing is, of course, is going
to
have.
They're
going
to have to win. He's going to have to win. But like Dylan Gabriel at Oregon, I mean, look, I think one of the things that this whole realignment thing has helped all of us is we'll see Oregon play, we'll see Washington, we'll see some of these West Coast teams play when we're not sleeping. You know, half the time, you know, they start in the games, we're all in bed in the East Coast. You're not, but most of us on the East Coast are. And so I think and Dylan Gabriel is going to shine. I mean, he's been playing as long as anybody in the league. I mean, he'll play really well in that offense at Oregon.
Yeah, it's set up for success there. As we saw Bo Nix have that success over the last couple of seasons, Dylan Gabriel could come in and do similar things, I think, in the skill position guys. Oregon really good along the offensive line, and they're humming. That Oregon Ducks program is really good, and maybe, just maybe, in their first year, they could win the Big Ten, which I think would be an interesting wrinkle in that conference. All right, on the other side, we'll wrap up the show. We'll get to blue chips, red chips, defensive backs, and linebackers, and also give you one final update on what's happening across the pond at Royal Troon for the Open Championship. Don't go away. Final segment of the Lombardi Line coming up after the break.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
If you haven't done so already, make sure you check out the nice appetizer of our NFL betting guide written up by Adam Burke over on VSiN.com. It has previews, picks, and predictions. It's a nice little appetizer for those of you that are looking to see if, hey, should I buy the guide? The answer to that question is yes. But if you want to see an appetizer of it, go to VSiN.com and check out all the other articles up on the site as well. Welcome back. This is the final segment of the Lombardi Line here on the DraftKings Network. Femi Ebebefe, Michael Lombardi. And Michael, I don't know if you saw over on Twitter or X, DraftKings Sportsbook has tweeted it. I have since retweeted it, but we are so back, buddy. We saw the first video from Kansas City Chiefs training camp. Patrick Mahomes scrambles to find Xavier Worthy deep for the touchdown. It's beautiful to see it on the timeline. It means nothing. They're not even wearing pads, but it's just, it's beautiful to see football back on our timeline. The timeline is once again whole.
Yeah, well, we're back, and that's the best part about the July is we know we're back, right?
Yeah,
I think it's awesome, and you know we're gonna, there's gonna be so much reaction to that. Oh my God, Worthy's gonna be great, yada yada yada.
Yeah.
But I'll take that for no football.
Yes.
I would rather have the overreaction and the hyper, you know, excitement than to not have and counting the weeks in the off season.
100%. Give me the noise. Give me all the stuff that doesn't matter because it's football and we love football and that's what we're all about here. So I just thought it was fun seeing that scrolling the timeline. I said, oh man, like, because all the highlights of football are from like last season or from years ago or whatever. But now we're getting stuff that's in 2024 and Xavier Worthy making a nice catch, which might mean absolutely zero once we actually get to the games. But it's fun to see it nonetheless there. Also, to give the folks an update on what's happening across the pond over at the Open Championship. Thurston Lawrence still in the lead at 7-under. He is through 10 holes. Justin Rose and now Xander Schauffele has joined Justin Rose in T2. Both of them 6-under through 11. I think Justin Rose is going to win it. That's the prediction that I'll make. I think it'll be Justin Rose
really?
Who wins the Claret Jug.
Wow.
Yeah, he's a proven major winner. I mean, maybe it's been a while since he's won a major. He's been in the mix in some, you know, but I think that this sets up well for him, and this is his time to once again lift the Claret Jug. So I'm going to go with Justin Rose, who right now is plus 260 over at DraftKings. Xander is the favorite, plus 130, as he's only one back. Of course, Xander finally broke through this year at the PGA Championship. Russell Henley, 16-1. Billy Horschel, 28-1. Shane Lowry, now 35-1. But Rose will be my pick, Michael. Who do you think wins it?
You know, I think this is always so hard, but I think it's going to come from the Rose, Scheffley, Lawrence group. I do. I think Henley and everybody else, I think it's hard to make up these strokes on the back nine. Lowry, he's -2 on the day. The one thing we haven't seen, Jason Day had the best day of anybody. He was -3. He's in at +1. He's tied for 18th. He moved up tied 18 spots. He's tied for 15th. So I get the sense that it's going to come down. I mean, if those three players, unless Henley really makes a giant move here, but I think everybody's through 10. Rahm ran out of holes. He really played. He's -3 on the day. So I think all these guys are, you know, and Lawrence is -4 on the day. So yeah. I think it's going to come from Lawrence, Scheffele, or Rose. I think Lawrence is in the driver's seat. He's played really well. I didn't know about him until Wes kind of informed us in the last hour. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he's a really good player, as Wes reported, and he's obviously playing his best. You know, it's round two. He shot 74. So for him to come back and shoot 65 on Saturday, he's playing the best on the weekend.
Yeah, 65 on Saturday, and then it'll be 4-under today is really, really impressive, especially 65 when the conditions were awful yesterday. A good job there by Thurston Lawrence, but I do think it'll be Justin Rose, who's at 3-under. Xander Schauffele also at 3-under as well through the round, but we still have plenty of holes to play over at Royal Troon. But before we get out of here, let's go over some of our blue chips and red chips. And this is a series and exercise that we do on the GM Shuffle podcast. We encourage everyone, subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcast. We've got a new episode coming up with Chiefs general manager Brett Veach tomorrow morning. So make sure you're tuned in, dialed in for that one when it drops into your feed. But the blue chips and red chips, I think, is a fun exercise because it gives us an idea as to who the needle movers are in the National Football League. And I think as bettors, we should be keen on that. We should know which players move the needle because we're going to get the injury reports all throughout the regular season. Does this matter? Does this matter? You want to know the guys who do matter. And especially in the cornerback position, the guys that matter, your red chips, L'Jarius Sneed, Paulson Adebo, Deron Bland, Jalen Johnson, and Rasul Douglas. Not the greatest players. They're not the elite guys, but they're still really good, impactful players on the back end.
No question. I mean, Bland, you know, Bland's got five touchdowns. I mean, it's hard to ignore the year he had in terms of nine interceptions, five touchdowns. I think part of this group is, too, can they play man-to-man, right? I mean, Snead was very good for the Chiefs last year playing man-to-man when they needed him. Douglas goes over to Buffalo from Green Bay and plays man-to-man, plays within their system. Jalen Johnson, he's with the, you know, obviously the Bears are more of a cover three team, but still plays effectively. So, you know, all these guys, when it's third and seven, third and eight, they can sit down and play really well. Are they the best corners in the league? No, I think there are other guys, and certainly in the blue chip category, the best one is Surtain, and then we go to Sauce Gardner. We don't have Surtain on the list because I miswrote him on the list when we were doing it live on the podcast, but the blue chip guys are really where you could set your defense and really feel good about taking a guy out of a game.
Yeah, and those blue chip guys are Sauce Gardner for the New York Jets, Derek Stingley of the Houston Texans. Those guys, draft classmates from a couple of years ago. The comparisons are there, but both have lived up to their billing. Jalen Ramsey with the Miami Dolphins, Trent McDuffie of the Kansas City Chiefs. He was all pro at slot corner. And then Charvarius Ward of the San Francisco 49ers. Now, these are the cornerbacks. And obviously, you mentioned Patrick Surtain would be in this group as well, but obviously, we don't have him in the graphics since we're doing it a little bit on the fly. Why are these guys the cream of the crop at the cornerback position?
Well, they can play man-to-man, and they're hard to deal with. Like Gardner and Stingley both have length to them, along with Ramsey, right? They're big corners. They're hard to throw the ball. What I think most people don't always understand about coverage is when you have a big man covering a receiver, the quarterback can't see separation like you and I see it on the television, right? Mm-hmm. He can just see color. And so when you have a big corner like Ramsey, Stingley, these guys that have six that are tall, Gardner, that have length to them, right? They don't have to be 4.32. They even though they can, all these guys can run well, their arm length makes up for that lack of 1 millisecond of a 40 time, and it's hard to throw the ball over them. And one of the things that you have to be a great corner in the National Football League is balance. You got to be able to jump. One of the things you look for in the NBA or in college basketball is, can a guy jump in balance? You know, to go get a rebound. Most great rebounders are always in balance. And it's one of the things that great corners have to have is the ability to jump at the right time, or else if you're on the wrong foot and you can't jump when the ball's in the air and you're an undersized corner, even though you have the guy covered, it's a completed pass. So these guys that have this height. Now, McDuffie, it's going to be interesting because he played in the slot. He understood his leverage points in the slot very well. Now he moves outside. You know, now it's a little bit more of an island. You don't have as many leverage points as you do when you play inside, because you can get help from the inside safeties or from the linebackers if you play outside technique. So that's not to say McDuffie's not going to be a good player. He is. It's just going to be a different position for him.
Yeah, it'll be a little bit of an adjustment period. And it just comes and shows you the intricacies between slot corner and boundary corner. Those guys, it's a little bit different. Even though you're playing cornerback, it's almost like two different positions, one versus the other there. Yeah. Let's get to the safety position. We got a couple minutes left here in the program. Your redshirt safety, Xavier McKinney, comes to the Green Bay Packers from the New York Giants. Tyrann Mathieu for the New Orleans Saints. Minkah Fitzpatrick with the Pittsburgh Steelers. Geno Stone from the Ravens now to the Cincinnati Bengals. And Alohi Gilman with the Los Angeles Chargers.
Yeah, I mean, look, and that most people would say where, you know, Chargers, you know, I mean, you know, he's the best safety of the Chargers. And I would say, yeah, I mean, based on last year, when you keep expecting guys to play at a level that they didn't, Geno Stone had six interceptions. He was huge for the Ravens. He's going to be huge for that. Minkah Fitzpatrick was hurt quite a bit. So, you know, I think ultimately, you know, that Fitzpatrick is going to move into the other category. There's no question about that. But to me, the safeties, McKinney's very good for the Giants. We don't hear them talk enough about McKinney on the broadcast at all, especially considering how well he played for them.
Yeah, he'll be good for that Green Bay defense. The blue chip cream of the crop at safety, Jesse Bates with the Falcons, Antoine Winfield Jr. with Tampa, Jabril Peppers with the Patriots, Javon Holland with Miami, and then Kyle Hamilton for the Baltimore Ravens.
Yeah, I think Peppers has come a long way. I think he's the one guy that has really improved his game and has really made a huge difference in how he's played. Kyle Hamilton and Holland, I think Hamilton is used in the system perfectly. Winfield obviously got paid, and so did Bates, and those guys really play well, and they get their defense aligned.
And we'll continue to do this series throughout the rest of training camp here. We also did the off-ball linebackers in a recent episode of the GM Shuffle. We encourage everyone to check that out. And we're getting closer to the edge, guys, defensive tackles, and then we'll flip to the offensive side of the ball, offensive linemen, running backs, receivers, and ultimately quarterbacks, which is everybody likes to debate that topic. But that does it for this edition of the Lombardi Line. Michael, enjoy the rest of your Sunday, man.
Thank you, Femi. You too. Enjoy the golf.
All right. Good luck with the butts.